Hello and welcome back to the Retro Asylum podcast, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. Hello, Mads.
Mads is still drunk. Mads is still drunk from his Christmas party last night.
It's been a rough Christmas party.
It's not even Christmas yet. What are you talking about?
Almost. Just a month away.
To the day.
Until December, though,
well,
can it?
That's right.
Yeah, it's the 25th of November. In my grumpy world, Christmas doesn't start until the 1st of December. But you had your Christmas party last night, Mads, very early.
Well, we have this Danish tradition of doing these Christmas parties, and people need to attend like four or five Christmas parties. There's the one at work, and maybe there's the one at your kid's school, and maybe you have some one you always do with some friends, and there are a lot of Christmas parties to get done. So there are lots of weekends that you need to use. So starting Christmas parties at around the end of November is pretty normal, actually, and having them all the way up until just before Christmas.
You've got your liver in training.
I have. I was just telling Mark about these Danish traditions about drinking this schnapps, this like kind of, think vodka that's had different kinds of herbs soaking in it for 6 months or something like that. It gives it different kinds of tastes. And you do need to be in training to drink that.
Skull.
Yep.
And what's that really delicious Christmas dessert you guys have? It's like rice pudding.
Yes, it's like a kind of rice pudding. We have this French name for it, riz salamang. But
I love it. I love that.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
I've got Danish clients or Danish heritage clients. They're as English as they come, these guys, but they're of Danish. Their surname is Bertelsen.
Yep.
And they invited me two or three years ago to their Danish Christmas lunch, and they had this really delicious Christmas pud. It was really nice.
So you get some proper pickled herring, for example, as well. That's
yeah, they had all of that stuff. Yeah, I didn't have any of that.
Oh, well, that's good. That's really good, actually.
No go on that stuff, huh?
No, they didn't have any of those black sweets either that you made me taste.
Oh, but the licorice is good as well, but that's not part of a Christmas tradition, so that's okay.
That's good. And what about you, Mark? So you've just started a new job, so you're going to go to the Christmas party, get absolutely hammered, and make a good impression on your new colleagues?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. They actually did, because it's only a handful of people here in our little shop, so there's probably, it was like seven of us. But yeah, they've already scheduled a dinner, and I think, so should be good here in about two weeks for us, so.
And is Thanksgiving a booze-filled affair? Is that a boozy time of year?
Not for me, because I don't drink. But I don't think in general it's not a super boozy holiday. I feel like people that, you know, that do that, they'll have like wine and stuff with their dinner. But I don't. It's not like a let's get smashed kind of holiday. It's nuts. Even though most of us get a 4-day weekend, which is lovely.
Nice. You know. So you're in the midst of that at the moment.
I know. It's already Saturday morning. I'm like, I don't want to go to work on Monday.
Mate, you've got like 3 days left.
Yeah, I know. Right. No.
That's a problem with 4-day weekends, though, isn't it? We only have one a year. We have one at Easter. But you always kind of, I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, because you spend the whole of the 4-day weekend thinking about work on Tuesday.
I know. That's right. But no, it's pretty, it's great. I love Thanksgiving. If I had to classify a favorite holiday, it would be that. I mean, it's all about, you know, having good food and hanging out with family and I just and football. And it was some football talk on the Discord. Everybody seems to hate the American gridiron, but I enjoy it. I didn't watch any, but you know, but I do enjoy it. So I don't know.
We do have some fans there as well. I know Jim and Andy loves the
Jim
American
and Andy
football.
Are massively into it. Yeah. In fact, I would say Andy's more into the American football than he is our soccer.
Is that right? I mean, I heard him talk about it on the playthrough stuff, but has he ever gone to one of the ones that show up in London?
I think Andy and Jim went together a couple of years ago.
Did they? Oh, that's fun.
I was going to go, but the tickets are really expensive and they're really hard to get hold of. Really hard to get hold of. You've got to be very lucky. Unless you're a member of Wembley, Club Wembley or something like that, they're quite difficult to get hold of. The demand is really high.
Interesting. Yeah, I remember when they started doing that, I thought that was really interesting. I'm like, anybody in England wants to watch this? I had no idea.
I mean, you'd be, you know? You'd be really surprised. In fact, there's a local gridiron team where I live in. I live in a reasonably small town about 40 miles from London. And we've got a baseball team and an American football team.
No kidding. I'm sorry that we're leeching all over the world. That's terrible.
We gave it all to you anyway, mate. It's all right. No, American football is just rugby, isn't it, really?
Yeah. We don't need to get into that, though, do we? the Aussie rules.
On the game.
Aussie rules footy is the craziest that I've watched, and I.
Yeah, I mean that's just another variation of rugby, isn't it?
Just slightly more violent, I think. I had a friend that played that. Yes. He was from a guy from Melbourne, and he, I think, at the age of 28, he broke his second kneecap and stopped playing. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the most brutal of all those, though, is this is not a curious sport podcast, but this is anyone who's tuning in, we are going to talk about games, I promise, and there will be some retro games as well. But the most brutal variation, have you ever watched Gaelic football, the Irish variation of?
No.
Man, so they play with sticks. So it's kind of like a weird, it's almost like a kind of lacrosse, if you probably.
Yep.
It's like a kind of mix of rugby, lacrosse, and hockey, I suppose you would say. But man, that is super, that can be super violent.
We'll have to ask Martin about that.
About Gaelic football,
So turning this into video games, have you guys played Brutal Sports Football? On the Amiga CD 32, for example, there's a good version there.
No.
It's actually quite good fun. Many you should try that.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. I'd love to try that.
Yeah, I played it a bit in the past, but a modern variant of that is Blood Bowl, which is a miniature game, isn't it?
Yeah.
A tabletop game.
Yeah, it is.
But there's been video game adaptations of that, which is like a fantasy-based future sports kind of thing.
I played the tabletop version, but it's so slow. It is slow.
And the video game, I've got it on the PSP. I picked it up and when I was quite into it a few years ago, but it's slow as well, even in video game form.
Okay.
So any exciting gaming going on, Mads? Have you been up to much?
I have been playing Mario Picross? I don't know how you say that.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. So that's pretty much, apart from all of the duty gaming of playing Hades and StarCraft and whatever we're doing right now.
I like that, the duty gaming.
Yes, exactly. So on my own, I've been playing Mario Picross, actually, because I saw, I think it was King Trilo who finished it.
King Trilo, and
wrote that on the forums. So I thought, might as well have a look. And I didn't know Picross before, but turns out I did anyway, because my daughter, she plays these games all the time on her phone.
Yeah.
These little numeric puzzles. So I thought, might as well just pick that up. And I'm completely hooked on it now. So I'm playing like half an hour in bed every night where I should be sleeping instead. So yeah, working my way through that. So if you like your puzzle games and stuff like Sudokus and stuff like that, that's a great little game.
And what platform is that on? Because it's obviously had multiple releases across multiple platforms.
Okay, I played it on... I'm playing the Game Boy version on my Analog Pocket. Yeah. I locally found a copy for about 15 quid that I'm probably going to be picking up. Right now I'm playing it on the OpenFPGA core instead.
Yeah, nice.
That's cool.
Very nice. And other than that, just the duty gaming, which you've coined a phrase there.
Yes, like. Just the duty gaming. I am loving StarCraft 2. Really looking forward to recording on that, because on one hand, I'm loving it. On the other, I now, after all these years, perhaps see the flaws in the single-player campaigns that I didn't really consider before. It is definitely, most definitely, a multiplayer game, and there's a single-player campaign tagged on. But loving it anyway. Almost through the Zerg campaign now, so just getting ready to get into Protoss territory. And apart from that, of course, playing some Hades, but I stopped playing that actually. I'm trying my best not to pick it up again.
That's a shame. But come and listen to Playthrough if you want to hear us talk about Hades, because that's where we'll be doing that.
Yep.
I'm also really enjoying StarCraft. I've just finished the Zerg campaign. I feel like I'm really into it now, and I feel like I understand it. And so as the missions are challenging, they're definitely a challenge. And some of those later Zerg campaigns, taking me... I mean, I'm probably quite slow, I think, in the way I do it, but it's taken me over a couple of hours, per mission.
I think the longest I've had so far was like 45 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I feel like I would just get obliterated in multiplayer, you know, because I'm so patient and work the tech tree and upgrade all the units and make sure. But we'll talk about this when we record the StarCraft episode, but yeah, I'm constantly aware of my finite resources, you know, and thinking about expansion and outposts, and this is all stuff that you just don't really have to think about with Command and Conquer. You have one base, you build it up, you build your army, that's normally the end of the mission, whereas in StarCraft you have to think, right, I need to expand and I need to defend that outpost, and
That's part of the fun.
I'm really enjoying it.
When you get into the multiplayer gaming, that's where the real good players, makes them win, is the ability to expand and hold those positions, because then you win the resource race, of course, and then in the end you'll be the strongest. So.
I can see it, and I feel like I can feel the balance, even though you can't really experience that in single player, because obviously the single player's missions are designed to be won, right? You know, the game is designed for you to progress. Yep. But I can feel that in multiplayer, the balance between the various factions, and I can feel that it would be incredible, which is obviously why it's had such a, you know, such a long lifespan in terms of competitive play. But I sense that I probably won't experience that this month. We're running out of time a little bit, aren't we? And just circumstances have conspired. One day, hopefully. What about you, Marcus?
Well, I just fired up StarCraft finally. I haven't really had time with the new job. Like you said, things are starting to mellow out for me finally, which is good. I'm getting kind of into the swing of things and starting to feel normal. So... that being said, being a long weekend, I've fired up StarCraft, and again, kind of like RPGs, RTSs, I don't gel with them, but I haven't really given them the time. So, I mean, I'm going into this thing straight virgin. And so, I mean, exactly. And so, which is great, because I never would fire this thing up, never. But maybe you can give me a couple of tips, because... you know, if I decide to be on this episode with you guys, I got to get a little bit further. But what I find difficult is trying to manage the resources as well as building the, do I, you know, who do I build the soldier? Do I build more of the things that do the mining and the building? I don't know where to, and I guess that's the part of the real-time strategy, right? Is trying to decide, and as well as like who do I send off, and oh my gosh, this guy's not doing anything, and I like it was madness for me. So
I would say there are four phases. Economy, you need to get your economy going ASAP. I'm in Zerg mode, so I'm thinking drones, but whatever. I forgot what the term version of. Get the SCVs going. I mean, I would normally have, you know, 10 of those farming the minerals, 5 on the Vespine. So you get that going. You then get your defenses in place. So get your turrets and get your, you know, get your missile towers. Get make sure you can fend off. I mean, the AI is normally pretty kind, right, Mads, on most of the missions. Yep. So it throws a manageable number of units. There are times when you feel it's a little bit hairy, but it feels manageable most of the time. Scouting would be my next kind of start scouting around your immediate area. Normally you find extra minerals and the other thing I found as well is don't always feel as if you have to obliterate everything on the map. If you've got an objective, focus on that objective. You know, you can waste a lot of time taking out units and mini bases that you don't really need to. Normally you can, there's a route through the map which will miss out a lot of the main force.
Okay. Unless the mission says destroy all enemy units or destroy all enemy, don't. I mean, just go for the mission.
Okay.
And look for a route. If you're attacking what you think is the objective and it's heavily fortified, chances are you can sneak around the side or sneak around the back, you know, and it won't be so heavily defended.
It'll always be... we will talk more about this later, but one thing I do like about the campaign is that the campaign is actually one big tutorial teaching you how to use the different units. So there will always be one unit or two units that suit this mission, and they will be, they'll show you how to get around all of the obstacles that they put up. So if you are in a mission where there are so many anti-air things on your enemy's side, that's probably because you're supposed to be using siege tanks, for example. And so there's you get some you get whacked by a 2x4 every, you know, every once in a while when you go out and your army gets decimated because it was the completely wrong army you build up, and then you need to go back and figure out what to do next.
So
and siege tanks are your friend as well. Once you get access to them, yeah, they can decimate a base in no time at all. They've got range. They can stick out of the range of the defences, and they will just. But then if there's air units, you know, if there's lots of air units, they will decimate your siege tank. So you need some support there.
Because I don't think I've gotten to a point where I can build. I only beat the 30-minute hold camp.
Yeah, you know, mission four, I think, so, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay. So when you talk about the units. Because I feel like I have to like click and drag to highlight people, and then send them out.
If you press, I think Control 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you can select teams instead. So you drag and select them and say Control 1. The next time you just press 1, you'll select those units. So that's how you manage your army.
Yeah, gotcha. And same if you've got, you know, you've got like you go on your barracks or whatever, and you press Alt and 1, then every time you press 1, the camera will snap immediately to the barracks.
Yep.
No, interesting.
And if you double click a unit, you get all units of that type on the same. That's on the screen right now. Just select it.
I didn't know that. Okay. That's interesting.
Use that all the time because often you'd actually like your armies. You'd like to control the different units differently. So I'd just double click and say that's team one. Double click on another kind of unit. That's team two. Double click on a third kind. That's team three. And then control them like that when I'm moving across the screen.
Yeah, nice. Okay, wow. That's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
It's a lot of learning hotkeys then, as well. Okay.
Yeah.
That's well, we'll see where actually, I can get.
Yeah. We'll and okay, the most important thing ever is never move somewhere. That happens only like 1 out of 10 or maybe 1 out of 20 times you need to just move somewhere. You want to do an attack move. So when you move a unit from A to B, select it, press A and then left click where you want it to go, because that means go to this place but attack anything you meet along the way. Otherwise they'll just be cannon fodder. They'll just say, okay, I'm supposed to go there, and no matter who attacks me, I'm just gonna go this way.
Yeah
I've noticed a few,
and that's super useful when you get into the Zerg missions and you get these units called the Scourge that are basically suicide bombers. They attack all the air units with. That is super useful. You can get those to scout out, and they'll just basically just dive bomb any airborne units they see. They're really cool.
And you use that as the attack, not just moving, but the attacking.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all of this is actually explained. Whenever you start a mission, there's a pop-up that gives you some tips and tricks. So if you read those, you'll learn gradually. But I find some of it isn't explained well enough, actually, now playing it years later. I know all of this, but I can very much see how it can be a bit hard to get into.
Yeah, it's all in the manual as well, but the manual is quite dense, to be fair.
Yeah, I actually have a big box copy of this game. I found at one of the thrift stores years and years ago. I had means to plug it into an old computer, but I'm like, nope, time doesn't dictate that. Just fire up. I was excited when it was like free on Battle.net. I'm like, that's cool. Yeah. So
I think I have like 3 physical copies because I bought 2 back in the day because I wanted to be able to play it in multiplayer with
Link,
people.
Yeah.
And actually later on found out you don't need to do that because you can install what's called a spawn version. So you can actually play 3 players with just one official copy.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, well, I bought 2 back in the day, found one in the thrift store at some point, but I haven't got the box for any of them because all of those I threw away years ago. So I've just got the discs and the CD keys.
Yeah.
I've got like the I've got a copy of it, but it's not big box. It's the what you call it, like the
DVD,
like the DVD style case.
Okay, I luckily I had the big box, so I still have the manual and all of that tucked away somewhere.
It's actually pretty common, isn't it? It's not even the big box isn't that expensive compared to what some big box releases go for.
They've sold so many of them. Yeah, which makes it nice.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to talking about it, actually. I think it'll make for a good episode for us.
Yeah. Be interesting.
So that's coming up soon enough. Right, let's get into the meat of this episode then, guys, because we are here to pick a shortlist for the December Game Club. And we thought we'd make a festive theme. We don't often do this in December. We've done a winter theme in December, but we don't often go with a festive theme. But I don't know. I was feeling a bit jingle bells, and I suggested that we make it festive.
Yep.
So what we asked our Discord members, we threw a suggestion out there to give us a game that they associate with Christmas, and ideally it would be accompanied with a Christmas memory around that game. Now, the Breakfast, it doesn't have to be Christmas themed, it doesn't have to be winter themed, but it was a game that reminded that person of Christmas and really why it did. So we've got about 12 suggestions that we're going to go through here, and then we're going to throw in a suggestion of our own, and then we'll whittle down that list into a short list of three or four. Should we do four, guys? We're going to have about 15 on the long list.
Yeah.
Should we whittle down till we have four?
Let's do four.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Okay.
Come on, Hobbit says, follow Smeagol, good Smeagol. Games. Oh, he loves his games, but he hates his retro games. No, no, we don't. He loves his retro games. No, he hates it. He hates us the pixel count. No, he loves the pixel count. Smeagol loves pixels. No.
So we're going to go with four then, and we're about to start going through the list. And I'm hoping that you listeners don't see anything out of the ordinary there, and it's nice and seamless, because we've had a few technical issues. We probably covered the first half a dozen games in the list, and we did realize that Mads' recording had, for some reason, stopped. So we've gone back 20 minutes of, 50, well, about 10 minutes in our life. And
Yeah, well, it's deja vu all over again.
Mads, do you think your Mac is like a breathalyzer? And it's like, nope, he's too drunk. He's got to be
stopped. It could be.
Audacity.
I am breathing at it, so yeah.
Well, in the last 5 years, it's never happened before, so that is a bit weird.
Yeah, that's so weird. Oh, well. Yeah.
But here we go then. Come on, guys, let's get on with this. So we're going to do this. Mark is going to go first, reading Roushi's suggestion.
I'm going to start with Mr. Roushi. He says, Yakuza for the PS2 is the best Christmas game, but since everyone has played that, maybe Blue Stinger for the Dreamcast. It's not a great game, but it's interesting how different both the US and Japanese versions feel. Plus, it's not common for survival horror games to take place during Christmas. So this is a game that apparently it's a survival horror and it takes place during Christmas, which is kind of fun.
Maybe, I think we're saying, weren't we? I don't think Roushi quite got the memo, but it's all good. It's all good. Roushi was thinking of a game that happens at Christmas.
Around Christmas, yeah.
He's mentioned the wonderful Yakuza, of course, and the sequel also takes place at Christmas. But yeah, Blue Stinger, Dreamcast launch game, not a game I'm terribly familiar with, other than the Mac. I think it was kind of like a 6 and 7 out of 10. Either of you guys played it?
No, never.
Never, no. Okay. No, but I think this one could be fun. Survival horror games, I've tried and I've never clicked with as, you know, they've never like made me want to play, but yeah, Dreamcast sounds good to me. I'm kind of excited about
it. We did love a bit of Dreamcast.
I was looking at a bit of the description on Wikipedia, actually. So it's an action adventure game, and you're defending some island that's been overrun by monsters. So,
sounds like survival horror, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does sound good.
Yeah, if not a bit generic. It's one of those launch games, isn't it? Kind of 65-70% kind of launch game, which is always quite fun to look at, actually, with a bit of jank.
Yeah.
Next up, Matt, do you want to take King Trilo?
I do. King Trilo writes, I'm going to go completely rogue here and say Football Manager on the CPC 464. I don't remember the exact year, but I was bought my first ever home computer, the 464, and was around 6 or 7 at the time in the 80s, and remember playing on that game for hours and hours on end. So even though it isn't Christmas related, I remember Mr. Tom's furry face sitting there staring at me like he was my own personal Santa Claus that year. So Chris, this should be right up your alley, eh?
Yeah, I've got lots of nostalgia for this, and I know exactly what King Trilo means. I can picture Kevin Thomas's face. I had it on the Speccy, I imagine it was a very similar version. It's a difficult game, I think, to go back to now. I think it, I mean, a lot of these early management games are really primitive, but this is really, really primitive. I've got tons of nostalgia for it, though, and it'd be a fun time to revisit it, but can't imagine many people playing it for a month, you know, and yeah. What about you guys? I take it, Mark, you this is probably so far off your radar that doesn't even begin to reverberate.
I don't recall managing games at all. I mean, micros are, and they probably were here, but they definitely were not popular like I hear among some of the other European focused podcasts that I like and listen to. But are these games text only? I mean, are they just kind of text based?
Yes.
Or they're
so yeah,
or
they're. Yeah.
No, this game did have some graphics, though. I mean, the goals they used, there was a kind of very, very primitive graphical representation of the beautiful game. And you'd see your goals and your near misses. I mean, but my Jesus, those graphics have not aged well.
Okay.
they have not aged well. And this got a remake on mobile phones about 3 or 4 years ago. And they cut out the match engine parts. And I think you could tell, because I think there was about 3 different animations for the goals. So obviously, once you'd seen them all 500 times, then they would lose their charm. So I think you could turn them off, and I imagine most people probably did.
Mm-hmm.
But these games were everywhere. Back in the 80s and 90s, these management games were everywhere. You know, Tennis Manager, Boxing Manager, Wrestling Manager, Rockstar Manager. You know, they were all there. We loved them.
Interesting genre.
Yeah.
I'll go next. Heavy Metal Don, who did post a joke suggestion, but his real suggestion was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the graphic adventure, the LucasArts title. He says, "This is the game I play every Christmas Day, even if it's just for 10 minutes. It instantly transports me back to Christmas Day, 1989, 11 years old and getting my first computer, an Atari 520 ST. It had the power pack with tons of games, but I also got a copy of this. My first big box game. Such a happy memory firing this up. It felt like nothing else I'd ever played and totally sucked me in. I don't need an excuse to play this at Christmas, but it would be good to play alongside you all." Indiana Jones, Mads, what's your history with this one? LucasArts game?
Yeah, as you know, I love my LucasArts adventures, the point-and-click adventures. But this is one of the very few that I haven't finished because it has this infuriating action part where you need to do boxing. So, of course, you start actually the game by sparring. So you're taught this little boxing mini game, and then later on you're supposed to use that. And if you die, well, you need to reload and start over from the last save. At least that's how I recall it. So I must have picked this game up. I played it back in the day and didn't finish it because I hated that boxing. And I must have picked it up and tried to finish it at least 10 times over the years because I love my LucasArts point and clicks. And there's so much to love here. It's a beautiful looking, beautiful sounding, and I do love the Indiana Jones story that it's going through. But I never actually finished it because of this this action part. And whenever I got to the German castle, I would die by boxing with the guards and stop playing it, rage quitting, and never getting back to it. So I'd actually love a chance to play this again. But if we are going to play this, I will be doing my damnedest to find a hacked version where you can just press a key to win the boxing match, if that exists, because that would be so good.
I'd be surprised if it doesn't. I mean, is there anybody who likes any action sequence in any point and click adventure game? No. Is there a good one?
No, I can't. I remember Full Throttle as well.
Full Throttle,
man,
yeah.
When those action sequences came in, I got so mad. I almost put the mouse and keyboard down and walked away from the game at that point. Yeah. But luckily, I do believe in Full Throttle. There's actually in the game from the get-go a key you can just press to win.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Wow. So,
and those action sequences were quite easy. I mean, I find I lose these boxing matches all the time.
So do you think that they did this as they were kind of testing? Because 89 is a little early for LucasArts games, right? You think there's a couple that came before.
Maniac Mansion must have been 87 or something like that. And Zach McCracken, 88. And 89, we've got, what, prop now. 89 is actually, it's before Monkey Island and Loom.
Yeah, Monkey Island was 90,
right? Yeah, they were 90. Okay. So maybe Loom was about the same time actually as this, but it's one of the early ones at least.
I just wonder if they're kind of experimenting with, let's try and do some action in these games.
Yeah, it's funny because they had, I mean, in Zach McCracken, I mean, as far as I'm aware, in Zach McCracken and Maniac Mansion, obviously we played through, there's no action sequences in Maniac Mansion. I've never heard of an action sequence in Zach McCracken. I've not played that one myself.
No.
But both
McCracken and Maniac Mansion, of course, had unwinnable states, and you could you could die. So yeah. they hadn't read Ron Gilbert's article that he's about to write next year yet.
Seminal.
The seminal work that actually tells you not to punish the player and let him have fun and experiment with stuff instead.
Exactly.
And that's when they got really good. So after this point.
But it'd be an interesting one to play. I mean, Christmas and winter time lends itself so well to point-and-click games.
Oh, yes.
It feels like a very Christmassy type of game to play.
Yeah, and great exposing our virgin of all genres, Mark, to some more.
To more point-and-click. Yeah, and I really enjoyed, you know, playing through Dark Forces that we did. I'd love to... Loom, I attempted. I remember. I don't think I got far into Loom, but
Day of the Tentacle. You finished that, didn't you?
Duh, I love Day of the Tentacle. Yeah. So I'd like to kind of get into some more. This to me sounds like a perfect December game. So, I know it'd be fun to see if you guys could get through the boxing if you can't find a poke, so to speak, to get through those parts.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Strong
suggestion from Donnie. Yeah. Mark, you're up next.
All right, we got Chris Atwell. He says, maybe a bit modern for the sum of the crowd, but along with Zelda Ocarina of Time, this was my entire Christmas holiday and went well into spring 1998-99. I had a pretty torrid year that year, and this was exactly what I needed to get away from all that. It was released in July, so not particularly Christmas-themed, but it wasn't, but that wasn't in the brief. GoldenEye and Mario 64 the year before were great, but I got lost in this game for weeks, even if it's shot down in flames, or if you've played it and hated it, give it a bash. Banjo-Kazooie.
Mm. Heavy hit to this one.
Rare
and
game.
And one I've been wanting to play for years, so I'd be happy with this one as well.
Jim and I sat down and watched a Banjo-Kazooie panel, because I think 25 years, isn't it? 1998, yeah.
Yep.
So it's like a 25th anniversary panel at EGX a few weeks ago.
They
had a lot of the old, they had Grant Kirkhope, who, you know, comes out for absolutely everything and is always good value for money. And they had a couple of the level designers and the coder on there as well. And it was... those guys who worked on it have a lot of fondness for the time they spent working on it as well. So, it's a game I've only ever dabbled with it. I'd love to sit down and play it properly. It would have been my game, even though I've never played it, and it's nothing to do with Christmas. It is the first game that enters my head as well when I think of video games and Christmas. It's crazy.
That's weird. Yeah, that's wild. I mean, it doesn't seem like a very Christmassy game or whatever, but that's that's cool that it resonates.
Riffing
with you
off
as well.
Mario 64, and some would say surpassing it. But I'll keep my powder dry, and we'll see if it gets.
I'd be excited to see that, because Mario 64. Wow, what a game!
What a game! What a game! Mads, you've got a long one here, so take it away.
Thanks. That's what they say. So, right, let's go back to 1991. It's the run up to Christmas. A young beardless King Kong Groover, a rapscallion who scoured arcades in his native North Wales, was making himself sick with excitement, for he knew that he asked Mummy and Daddy Kong Groover what he wanted for Christmas, and being a very good boy all year, that's hardly true now, is it, Riz? He was going to receive a device it was that would shape his formulative years and eventually his career, his very first computer. He had been drawn to the Commodore, as his uncle Kong Groover had an Amiga 500, and he would regularly play Lemmings on it. However, he made a catastrophic mistake. By not explaining to his computer illiterate parents what he truly wanted, and a business decision by the computer giant. Sorry, Chris, are you moving this around while I'm reading it?
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize it was moving.
I think it's you are. So listeners, bear with me. I have to find the place again now. Here we see. Okay. You see, 1991 was the year after the ill-fated Commodore 64 DS was launched, a purely cartridge-based Commodore 64 machine without a keyboard. It just was not successful. Struggling, Commodore took the C64-compatible cartridges, stuck them in a box with the manual joystick and a C64 machine, and flucked them under the name Playful Intelligence in Tandy for £65.
This is why Commodore was such business heavyweight, you see, because they did stuff like that, and it's just genius, isn't it?
Yes. Of course, the C64 was a tape-based machine, but the tape deck didn't work on Christmas morning. Disaster. I couldn't play the three budget games that were gifts to me. American 3D Pool, Agent X2, and Roll Around. Nor the cover tape of the December 1991 from SAP 64, which had Spy vs. Spy 2, Arctic Antics, a classic game, I'm sure you'll all agree, Double Dragon 3 as a demo, and the most excellent Boulder Dash 4. So, Christmas 1991 was spent playing the games on the cartridge, which did work. Four excellent titles: Fiendish Freddy's Big Tub of Fun, Flimbo's Quest, International Soccer, and the C64 version of Clanks. And what he did then is that he actually started a vote on the Discord, so people would pick which one of those four games, because he would gladly play any of them, I think.
He's and a cheeky vote... one, that King Kong Groover, isn't he?
Yeah.
And the vote ended up being Flimbo's Quest. So Flimbo's King Kong Groover, or Riz's suggestion for us this time, is Flimbo's Quest for the C64.
What did you guys vote for, by the way? Did you vote?
It was Flimbo's for me. Yep.
I actually voted Clax, I believe, because I love Clax, and I never played the C64 version.
Mm.
Yeah. I voted for Flimbo's Quest. Yeah, I've always been intrigued by Flimbo's Quest. Mads, didn't the guy that you interviewed for Amiga Addict a couple of years ago, didn't he work on Flimbo's Quest? What was that guy, the Nordic-sounding guy?
You did an interview. Jakob, what was he called? He called Jacob something. I forget.
Didn't he do Flimbo's Quest?
No, I don't think so, mate.
No, he did Flink, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's not the Nordic sounding guy. That's he's a Dutchman. He did Flink, yes.
Well, this is by a team of Dutch people.
Okay, could Flimbo. Be
I'm sure. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I've got something in the back of my mind is telling me that they were made by the same people. Okay. I could be completely wrong.
Yeah, could be.
Good old-fashioned Euro platformer. Everyone loves a Euro platformer from the early 90s, late 80s, right, Mark?
It's my favorite genre. Yeah.
So Henk Nieborg, I'm just going to look. That was Henk Nieborg, by the way, who did the
Henk Flink. Nieborg, of course it was.
I'm just going to check if I can figure out whether he did have anything to do with Flimbo's Quest.
I don't think he did. I don't think it was him.
Okay.
Yeah, it begins with an F.
These lists are... this list is insane. I feel like when we throw the Discord in, they're all so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I love throwing it open to the Discord community, because you get, I mean, obviously we're going to choose games that we're fond of and everything else, but you get such a wide variety. I'll take the next one. Shadow of the Beast 2, says Stephen James, A Life in Retro. Shadow of the Beast 2 on the Amiga. My dad got me an A500 when I was 10, and this is one of the first games we tried to play. The intro terrified me, but I remember being really excited to play it on Christmas Day. Well, I could be Stephen James, because that exact thing, and this story's been told on Retro Asylum before I became a host. Yeah, I think probably Christmas 2017, there was a Christmas episode, and you guys, as it was then, Mads and the rest of the team, asked for listener contributions. And my one was based on the fact that in about 1989, maybe the year later, I was transitioning from Speccy to Amiga. And my parents got me my Amiga in October-ish. And of course, my dad couldn't resist. Let's just set it up and make sure it works right before Christmas. So we did the whole, let's check it works. And the one game that I was allowed to try was Shadow of the Beast 2. Mm-hmm. And I think it's widely perceived now that the Shadow of the Beast games are definitely more style, less substance.
Most definitely.
But if you'd had 5 years or so as a Speccy owner, to see that introduction of Shadow of the Beast 2, I mean, it literally blew my little mind.
Listening to the pan flute music and Yeah, it was so good. It's one of those games that when I went to, before I had my Amiga, when I went to friends and they had Amigas, they would pop in Shadow of the Beast just to show me what the Amiga could do, even though it was a bad game.
Yeah, it's a tech demo, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, more or less.
All three of them really were. To be honest with you, I've not played Shadow of the Beast 2 for probably getting on for, I don't know, 30 years, maybe more, 30-odd years.
Me neither. Would be fun to attack these games with save states.
Yeah, because it's so difficult. Yeah, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Mark, have you played Shadow of the Beast 2?
Nope, I've dabbled in the first one, running left and right and punching and kicking and going up and down, I don't want to call them tubes, but going down the ladders and that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I'm coming from a different, I feel like it could be a good game, but I haven't really put more than 20, 30 minutes into them, and I haven't really gotten anywhere. So save states, I haven't even thought about that, Mads. That's funny.
Yeah, I think Mads is right. I think in order to get through this, you would definitely need some save states, but it might be fun to go back and have a look at it. You know, the old classic Shadow Over Substance title.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with him. As a Christmas memory, it's strong in my mind as well. So good one, Stephen James. Yep. Mark, you're up.
Ross of the Robots. I'm not expecting this to be picked, but the original Mortal Kombat.
Oh, God.
The reason this is my Christmas game is when it came out on the Amiga, I asked for it for Christmas. In a move which was totally out of character, my mom let my brother and I open one present to play on Christmas Eve. So, of course, we picked Mortal Kombat. In my eyes, it was arcade perfect.
Oh, my God.
Ever since that year, which I think was on the Amiga, no less. On the Amiga, which was 1994, I played Mortal Kombat on Christmas Eve. I have a tradition of having to do a fatality before I can allow myself to get festive. I love that.
Nobody, it's Mariah. It's Mariah.
You need
Carey
to search for some professional help there, Ross, I think.
And somehow he's managed to avoid prison.
That's a great story. That's what's so fun about these is listening to how everybody's, Christmas memories. I mean, being able to have a present.
Yeah.
Opening, like, that's such a, that was the same with us. We never got to do that. And so having something like that, and it's like, it sticks with you. Yeah. I've got to play Mortal Kombat. I got to do one fatality before I let Mariah Carey fly, like you're saying.
So, Chris, did you ever play Mortal Kombat on the Amiga?
Yeah, probably.
So I don't think I have. I played it on the PC and I played it on the keyboard. So you did have multiple keys and multiple buttons, of course. How would Mortal Kombat work if you needed to play it with a joystick?
Do you know
with
one button? I don't think it's that bad.
Okay.
I mean, I'm talking completely from memory here, but I don't think it's that bad. Like, I don't think it's not like a Street Fighter 2 kind of thing. I think it's actually, within the limitations, I think it's all right.
Okay. Yeah. I enjoyed Mortal Kombat on the PC, PC.
Wow.
So yeah, I'd be up for playing this. Not sure whether we can play the first one in multiplayer online in any way, but yeah, maybe we can on Amiga Live, for example.
I reckon
the Amiga version is good.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't advocate anybody playing the Amiga version now though, because we could just play the arcade ROM version. Or even
one of
the good home versions on the Mega Drive or the Super Nintendo. So right, Mega Drive is the place, right? Mega Drive is the version you have to play, I assume.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat. That could be interesting, and it would make Andy so happy. So,
We've already had one 1v1 fighter. Isn't that enough for the game club? Like
It turns out it was actually a bit more than enough, but yeah.
Mads, so, you're up next.
Yes, Superchunk 72 writes, Christmas Lemmings 1991. The free car disc Lemmings given away with Amiga format. Lemmings is probably one of the greatest Amiga games ever created. No Amiga owner in existence has not played this game at some point, I reckon. And this festive-themed freebie nailed the holiday season vibe. So much, in fact, that two more annual editions were released because it proved so popular. A mug of malt cider, a tin of Quality Street, and Morecambe and Weiss, which I don't know what is because I'm from Denmark, on in the lounge, whilst the old Miggy chimed out, "Oh no!" repeatedly.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes. Well, I completely agree. Christmas Lemmings is one of those games that I play every single Christmas at some point, just at least for 5-10 minutes, because just hearing those festive themed songs being played there, because of course Lemmings used all... actual music, not what do you call that? Actually, it's not licensed because it's just old
public domain
music, isn't it?
Yeah.
So hearing those old Christmas songs and seeing the little lemmings dressed out like small gnomes in their red suits and with their Christmas hats on or whatever that's called, it's just so Christmassy. So it needs to go on at some point.
Yeah. Mark. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I would be totally down to play this. Lemmings again is another black hole. I mean, you guys are filling black holes all the time with me in my my narrow minded gaming history. And so Lemmings, Christmas Lemmings sounds awesome.
What more is there to say, man? It's Christmas Lemmings.
Yeah, it's Christmas. I have seen it. I've tinkered with a lot of these things a little bit. So I'm setting up machines. So this is one I have fired up and you know put a few minutes into. And
puzzle games lend themselves so well to the winter months, in my opinion. Yeah. So it's it's a bona fide classic. And a very strong choice. Next up, Monster Hyde. Our friend Monster Hyde. He says Sonic. No, not Sonic.
No,
you're all right. Not Sonic. My Christmas game choice, and I'm sure this is another one that a lot of people will be able to identify with, would be Cannon Fodder. Oh, I played a couple of times.
He's just sucking up after all of that Sonic talk now, because now he's really hitting my G-spot. So.
Oh, God. I played a couple of times at a friend's house, but I didn't have an Amiga. I only had a Mega Drive. So when they announced that they were porting it to the Mega Drive, I was wetting myself in anticipation for ages. But I couldn't afford it right away and had to wait until Christmas to get it. That game was played all day, every day that Christmas, and remains one of my favourite Christmas memories ever. I still play Cannon Fodder pretty regularly, especially around Christmas time. It just transports me back to a much simpler time.
Ditto. It's also one of my... I mean, Christmas Lemmings, Cannon Fodder, and Supercars 2. Those three games need to go on every single Christmas. So
Yeah. Again, it's a funny one, Cannon Fodder, because it's not Christmas themed, but it is another game that I would associate with Christmas. It has some snow levels, but that's probably about it. I think I might have got it for Christmas, one Christmas as well, and that's why I associate it so much. But Mark, is this Cannon Fodder a game that you associate with Christmas?
No, never. I mean, you know, again, Amiga being the American computer company, we never had those here. So Cannon Fodder, and I don't know that it was released on the American Genesis. So
I don't know. I mean, it's the most British of games, isn't it? Really?
Yeah. Cannon Fodder, I mean, I associate it with the 3DO. That was the first time I saw it and played it on the 3DO when I was collecting things way, way back in the day. So, but for Christmas, no, this definitely doesn't seem. But the story is fantastic. I mean, playing it all day, you know.
It's the beauty of the game, and if you haven't played it, Mark, you really should try to spend some time with it. Especially the original Amiga version is so good. So playing it with a mouse and keyboard is the right way to play this game, if you ask me. But it actually works really well on the CD32 with the controller as well.
With the pad, yeah.
And it's on the Evercade, for those who are interested. It was on one of the Codemasters carts on the Evercade, which it
is
might be
the
nice.
CD32 version then? Because it would have been optimized.
I think it's the Mega Drive version.
Ah, the Mega Drive one, of course. Mm. Yeah, okay. Cool.
On the same car as Sensible Soccer as well.
Yeah.
I think we just take one game a day. We just play each one of these every day.
We can get very far in Cannon Fodder in one day, I can tell you that. Who's up next? I've lost it. I think it's Mark.
That's me.
Mm-hmm.
Wise Mids. So Percy Penguin in the present Palaver. Okay. Yeah. A modern specky platformer where you play a penguin trying to save Christmas. If that doesn't get you in the mood, then you must be the Grinch. Percy Penguin. God, that's a tongue twister. He's killing me on that one. modern Specky. Modern Specky game. That's cool. I really enjoyed WHB. We played that puzzle game. It was a modernish Specky game.
It reminds me, if you look at the screenshots, it looks like a kind of Manic Miner kind of progressing through the screens, trying to retrieve the presents, apparently, and then take them back to Santa.
Oh, yeah, fun.
Looks good. Whether we could get behind a modern game, who knows? But we'll see.
Yeah.
Mance.
Yes, we've got a suggestion from Coop here as well. He says he would like to play Julian Gollop's Lords of Chaos. Me and my best friend both wanted this game so badly, and we're reading all the reviews and hyping each other up to get it for Christmas. Both played the hell out of it around Christmas separately, but with the knowledge as soon as we could, we'd be couch two-player instead. Go up. Spent the days after Christmas doing my first all-nighters, getting up after the parents went to bed, sleeping over, and sneaking downstairs to play this over and over again. And then the parents would say, "You guys are up early." When they got up in the morning, of course. Love that.
So Julian Gollop, obviously the guy behind XCOM, he would go on to design and create XCOM. I don't know this one. I've never played it.
No, but just because I've never played it either, but it is Julian Gollop and it is a turn-based tactical role-playing game. I'd love to play this as well. Yeah. So, I mean, I know Mark is going to love this. Sure. I mean, a 1990s 8-bit turn-based tactical role-playing game. What's not to love, Mark?
Yeah.
So what is this platform then? What's Specky. It on? Spectrum?
Yeah, I'm guessing for Koo it would have been the Specky, right?
Yeah,
I'm just curious. Yeah, I guess boarding, I don't know. I think he posted a picture on Discord, if I remember.
Nice. So yeah, that is that's another good suggestion there from Coop. Next up, so, Niels on Wheels says, "I'd like to suggest Dyna Blaster on the Amiga. Great 5-player action and an extremely simple version to play, as there are only extra bombs and fire power-ups. Still gets brought out via emulation at Christmas time most years, although sometimes we have to make do with the SNES version."
Yeah, great suggestion. And Dyna Blaster is Bomberman for you, Mark.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just rebranded in because it was especially in Ireland, of course, there were some other connotations with the Bomberman. So.
Yep, and it's interesting because NEC, they did the same thing with Bonk. They changed to PC. Yeah. Was it PC Kid or something?
Well, PC Kid, I think, was the original name, wasn't it? And then it became Bonk for the North American market.
Gotcha.
PC Gengen, wasn't that what it was called?
PC Gengen.
Yeah.
Nice. Mark, you're up.
Okay, just real quick, Coop, I went and found the screenshot. It said CBM 64, so it wasn't CBM Commodore Business Machines?
Yep, Commodore 64. Huh. Okay.
So wonder if that's what he was hitting on. Anyway, okay. Oh, is this looks like our final... The original Chris, Mr. Chris O'Regan.
The original and best.
Whatever.
While I did make the joke about Die Hard Trilogy being the only viable Christmas game, and I still stand by that, the one game that fills me with Christmas spirit more than any other is Tau Ceti. I still remember seeing it wrapped under the tree, not knowing what on earth it was due to its weird shape. It remains one of my favorite Spectrum games, although I think the C64 port is the best one. Wow. Never heard of this one, Tau Ceti.
This would not be your cup of tea, Mark.
No, Chris. No,
it wouldn't.
Apparently, everything that Chris loves, I hate. Me and Chris have talked about this in the past.
This would not be your cup of tea. Matt, have you played this?
I have a bit back in the day, yes. I must admit, I was probably too young when playing this, so I couldn't really figure out what to do. So
this is a Chris O'Regan game.
Yeah, definitely.
Isn't it? You know, this is, it's quite strategic. It's kind of got elements of like a 3D. I've only ever really...
Yeah, it does. You have this little radar and you drive around the environment trying to... I actually forget what the aim is of the game is these days, but I do remember it has this 3D view and you have your radar over on the right-hand side and some metadata and so on. So
Yeah.
Yeah, so a space exploration thing, and I forget what the goal is actually is, but the, yeah. most of the time, Mark, you're spending driving around and nothing's really happening and you're trying to figure out where you're supposed to be next.
Well, maybe maybe Christmas would be a good time to jump into a game like this.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to eliminate that game because I don't want Chris to hunt me down and kill me. So there you go.
You'd be in a lot of trouble.
I know, I'm going to leave it up to you.
Did you play
guys.
Along, Mark, when we were playing Midwinter?
Yes, I did. I did play a little Midwinter. So that was right as I kind of joined in the Discord. That was pretty early on for me.
I'm thinking this would be feel like a older, simpler version of something like that.
Okay. Yeah, Midwinter was rough.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, I mean, it, along those lines.
Yeah, along those lines, at least some. Yeah, in that vein. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think it looks quite interesting, but yeah, I think. Yeah, I'd love to see Mark having a go at this.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't.
Specky version was the original, then got releases on the Atari ST, which is the platform I recognize it most as I see it as an Atari ST game.
Okay.
But it also Amstrad C64 and then later MS-DOS.
Chris O'Regan has an Atari ST very early on, so maybe that's the version he normally played. Yeah.
So we're a bit pushed for time as we had our technical hitch, but we're going to give Mads a game because Mads is desperate to get his on the list. So go on, Mads, go for it.
Yes,
what's your
yes.
game?
So I remember one winter in December, many years ago, I had my C64 and my parents had this little cottage that we were staying at. And I had brought my C64 along with my tiny 14-inch black and white TV as well and had it set up down in the living room and was playing games happily and put to bed at some point in time. And then my parents never played any games. I'm sure I've told this before on the show, by the way, but my parents never played any games, never really had any interest in gaming or computing, really. But I remember waking up in the middle of the night and not being confused that there was sounds coming from downstairs and there was still light on in the living room. So, of course, I got out of bed and went down there. And there in front of my C64 was my mom and dad playing the game Gumshoe on the C64. And it's a one-player game, but they were playing it multiplayer because there are two keys for walking left and right and two keys for up and down and a key for shoot. So one of them would be controlling the left-right movement and the other would be going up ladders and down ladders and shooting. And they were playing a multiplayer Gumshoe. So and that memory stuck with me for many, many years. That's a Christmas memory for me. And I love Gumshoe on the C64. So
have you been back to it?
I have, and it's great. I love that.
is this a port of the NES game?
I've got no idea.
I think Gumshoe on the NES is a light gun game on the NES.
No, it's not a light gun game in any way. No. You are this little Gumshoe, this private detective, and you enter a building, like a tall building, many, many floors, and yes, a skyscraper of some sort. It's got escalators. It's got elevators. I forget whether it has ladders, but at least escalators and elevators and lots of baddies coming out trying to shoot you. You can shoot and you can crouch to avoid their shots and you need to figure out, and there's a bit of random randomization here because there's a girl you need to rescue in all of the buildings and she can be in two, three different locations that are randomly selected. And that's the mission. You need to, in every building, go in, survive, get to the part where the girl is, and as soon as you touch the girl, it's the next level. So you can go to the next level. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, Gumshoe on the NES is a light gun game, so I don't think it is the same.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, this is a great game. I love this.
Cool. Fun. That's a nice memory. It's accompanied by a nice memory, and that's what we like.
We do like the memories.
Should be about.
Love the memories.
Right then, guys. We've got a list of games that we are now going to whittle down to four. So we'll just go round. Eliminating one each. I'll read the list of games. So we have on our long list Blue Stinger, Football Manager, Last Crusade, Banjo-Kazooie, Flimbo's Quest, Shadow of the Beast 2, Mortal Kombat, Christmas Lemmings, Cannon Fodder, Percy Penguin and the Present Palava, Lords of Chaos, Dino Blaster, Tau Ceti and Gumshoe.
So, okay.
Good list. It's a long list.
Mark, go on.
How you're making me start?
Knock one out.
Okay.
Do Chris O's. Come on. I dare
I'm
you.
Not, no, I'm not doing it. I am not going to. We got a Christmas episode coming up. He may or may not be appearing. And no way. So, gosh, first one I think I'm going to wipe out King Trilu, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm up for doing Football Manager yet, but I do think we need to do some. Maybe somebody needs to do a definitive one, whether it's modern or not. I would love to try it. Mm. Not that I can manage anything. I can't even manage my family here, so let alone a football team.
One day we will play a Football Manager game, but it won't be in December 2023.
Yeah, maybe we should throw it out for next year.
Yeah, that might be
I'm gonna skip that episode because I'd rather watch paint dry.
Chris, you can teach me the ways of the managing.
I'd love it. Yeah, Mads.
Okay, this is actually tough because there are so many good ones here. So this is not a case of selecting bad games. It's just selecting games that are, well, not as good as all of the others. I'm going to eliminate, Percy Penguin, actually. Sorry, Jim, but that doesn't appeal to me as much as the rest on this list. So off it goes.
Okay. I'm going to eliminate Dino Blaster. Now, I spent quite a bit of time with Dino Blaster as a kid as well. I had it on the Amiga, and I love playing that. But there's one caveat: I love playing it with my mates.
Yeah, true.
For me, it's a multiplayer game, and I don't really have a lot of people who would be willing to play a 16-bit game with me. So I'm afraid Dino Blaster has to go.
Okay, fair enough. Mark,
I'm going to go for the easy one. Sorry, Ross. I'm going to kick out Mortal Kombat. I've never been a fan of Mortal Kombat ever. But I love his story, and I love how that just fits with him for Christmas, and he plays it every year. I think that's great. But I think I'm going to wipe that guy out.
Okay. So I am going to go for Chris O. Bye to Tau Ceti. I think looking at this list of games for this Christmas, I would like something that's a bit more action oriented.
Okay, I'm gonna take out Roushi's pick, Blue Stinger, and there's something about this game that intrigues me. Japanese kind of action adventure game, but yeah, I feel like it doesn't really fit with the whole Christmas vibe for me. So I'm gonna take out Blue Stinger, get rid of the Dreamcast jank.
Cool.
Mark?
I think I'm going to have to get rid of Shadow of the Beast 2.
The Beast.
I just don't see myself enjoying that one during Christmas time. There's so many here. I want to play most of all of these. So, we're down to Last Crusade, Banjo-Kazooie, Flimbo's Quest, Christmas Linings, Cannon Fodder, Lords of Chaos, and Gum Shoe. I mean, you're down to seven. Yeah, we each got to knock one more out, it looks like, if we're going to keep four.
So sticking with my wanting to play something with a bit more action in it, I am going to get rid of Coop's suggestion, Lords of Chaos, even though it really intrigues me. I need to play that at some point.
Good early Julian Gollop game, but yeah, probably one that I was going to pick. Again, I see it more as a multiplayer game, and I could be wrong about that. But
really? Okay.
So my next one, Mads, I don't want to be accused of nepotism here, so I'm afraid I'm going to get rid of your game.
That's okay, mate.
Sorry, I love your memory, and I feel really bad, but I'm sorry. Of the games that are left, I couldn't get rid of any over Gumshoe. I'm sorry.
So how actually should we do what Mark did at some point and flip it on its head now? Now we get to save one each.
Get to save one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then I think we
should. That's great. You can pull a mark on it.
You get to start.
What left? Indiana Jones, Last Crusade, Banjo Kazooie, Flimbo's Quest, Christmas Lennings, and Cannon Fodder. So we're now going to choose one of these three to take forward. One of these five to take forward. Mark. Yeah.
You want me to start?
Yes.
I'm gonna save Last Crusade. I kind of want to play Indiana Jones. I want to try it.
Okay, good choice.
That's out of all of them. That's probably honestly any one of these I'm excited about. They all look great.
Nice, Mads.
So I'm torn between the two Amiga games here. Christmas Lemmings or Cannon Fodder, as I said, games I play every Christmas, and spending more time with them this December would be wonderful. Man, we've never covered any of them. We've talked about both games many times, but we never actually played them on the Game Club, have we? Tough decision time. I'm going with Christmas Lemmings, so I'm going to save that.
Save Christmas Lemmings.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Cool. Very Christmassy. And I am going to save. So I've got Banjo-Kazooie, Flimbo's Quest, and Cannon Fodder. I am going to choose the game. I love Cannon Fodder. I do. But I do find it very frustrating as well. Very frustrating. And although I do associate it with Christmas, I think I'll be swearing a lot if we play Cannon Fodder. The game that I have.
That's no good for Christmas.
The game that I've always wanted to play, and I think what better time than Christmas, is Banjo-Kazooie. I've always wanted to get stuck into it. I'd love to finish it. And yeah. I can just imagine finishing it around Christmas and it just being perfect.
Yeah, good job, mate.
Yeah, Banjo-Kazooie. I love Mario 64, so if it's anything like that, I will absolutely love it. So, Banjo-Kazooie.
So we have three candidates now. Should we pick the fourth one as well? Or
I think we should keep one more, right? And honestly, I think since we already have an Amiga game, I think we should, I mean, just as a universal, we should wipe out Cannon Fodder.
Okay.
Mark has taken an executive decision.
What do you think?
Yeah.
It should be consensus. It shouldn't just be me. What do you guys think?
No, I think it's
a good idea.
Let's stick with what the Yanks says.
Stick with the Yanks. The Americans are the leaders, so we got to go with that.
I like the idea. You got a PC game, an N64, Commodore 64, and an Amiga. I mean, that's diverse as it gets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So wonderful. We've got then Last Crusade nominated by Heavy Metal Don.
Yep.
Donnie's game.
Donnie will be happy. Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie nominated by, who is that? If we're going to do this, I've got to commit to it now. Banjo-Kazooie was nominated by Chris Atwill. Flimbo's Quest was Rhys King Kong Groover's nomination. And Christmas Lemmings was nominated by, drumroll please, it was Superchunk 72. So there we go. There's the four games.
Cool.
That's what we'll be voting on in a couple of days when this episode goes live. We'll get that vote up. And that feels like a good little list for a December, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. It does.
Yeah.
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 As I've said so many times before, I'll happily play any of these. So this is going to be a good month.
Yeah. Nice. Shout outs, guys, before we head on out of here.
So we're in a hurry. So shout out to Chris's daughter who needs to go to a party right now. I hope you have a great time. But apart from that, I'm good.
I'll do the new game, Old Flame Guides. I actually recorded an episode with them a couple, 3 weeks back, and my voice was completely wrecked. So enjoy that one. But we got to do a shooter episode. So I probably shouldn't have spoiled it, but it's okay. I'm super excited about it. It was really fun. Waffling. I mean, took one out of the playthrough book. Waffled. But yeah, no, that was fun. So I love those guys.
I'll shout out the rest of the RA team, the playthrough team, the Kane and Rince team, and we will be back recording some StarCraft in a week or so.
Yep.
Until then, thank you, gentlemen. Oh, big shout out to the Discord crew as well for helping us with this one. Yeah. It was fun.
That's great.
It was fun to go through those suggestions and hear some of your Christmas memories. We will do this again. But for now, we will see you on the other side. See you, StarCraft.
Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures,